All right. Justice Chafin has sat off this case, and Justice Millett is sitting.
City of Charlottesville et al. Versus Swiffani, Brian J. McNamara, Appellant's Counsel, Bradford M. Young, Appellee's Counsel.
All right, Mr. McNamara, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'm Brian McNamara. I'm very happy to be here on behalf of the City of Charlottesville. I would ask that the court allow me to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. With that, I will suggest to the court that there are two ways that this case could be considered. One is the very strict procedural way, and the other is to tackle a broader substantive issue all at once, rather than simply look to the procedural and send this thing back to the Court of Appeals. I have maintained in the course of writing our pleadings that probably, unfortunately for our clients, the correct way is most likely to tackle the procedural issue and remand it, should the court find our position to be sympathetic. And so I will probably spend the bulk of my time on that unless the court otherwise directs me. The initial citation of our error in this case is that we cited to the Court of Appeals error in finding that the law of the case doctrine applied to preclude them from considering whether or not there was an issue of cumulative slash gradual injury, or whether or not the claimant had sustained his burden to show an identifiable incident that would fit within the definition of injury. And the second go-round at the Court of Appeals, the court simply declined to consider those, suggesting that the court had essentially decided those issues the first time around. I would respectfully submit that there are several reasons why that is not the correct way for that case to have been handled procedurally. First of all, in deciding the first case, the court did not and it could not have disposed of those issues. And the reason it could not have and did not dispose of those issues is because it was remanding a large chunk of those issues for the commission to make supplemental decision on. The case was decided on the basis of the commission saying that an injury by accident was discernible within the evidence of the case over the course of an 8-hour day, consistent with their previous holding in Bandy versus Department of Motor Vehicles. Court of Appeals, shortly before we argued the case the first time, reversed Bandy and said to the commission very clearly that an 8-hour day was simply too long of a period within which to find an injury by accident, and remanded that case and subsequently remanded our case back for a subsequent finding in that case, suggesting to the commission that perhaps its discussion implied that there was a 4-hour period within which they could find an injury by accident having occurred. The words that they used on page 371 in the appendix, they said the assumption that Sclafani sustained a non-cumulative injury during the last 4 hours of training was justified based on Sclafani's own testimony. However, there was no specific finding to this effect. Therefore, we remand this case for the commission to make a factual finding consistent with this opinion as to whether Sclafani's injury occurred during the four post-lunch hours of the training. In short, they couldn't have decided the issue because they were asking the commission to make findings of fact that would be necessary to determine the issue. When we went back on appeal, we attempted to consider that question further, and we were rebuffed by the Court of Appeals, which cited to the law of the case doctrine, suggested that in its first decision, it had fully explored and fully decided the bulk of those issues, particularly cumulative trauma. Respectfully to the Court of Appeals, their decision to apply the law of the case doctrine there runs contrary to statute 17.1-412 specifically, a statute which is fairly self-explanatory. which says a judgment order or conviction or decree of a circuit court or award of the Virginia Workers' Compensation Commission may be affirmed or it may be reversed, modified, or set aside by the Court of Appeals for errors appearing in the record. If the decision of the Court of Appeals is to reverse and remand the case for a new trial, any party aggrieved by the granting of a new trial may accept the remand or proceed to petition for appeal in the Supreme Court. In essence, allowing the parties to say, let's see what happens on remand before we take this matter to the Supreme Court. That ultimately was the option that the city of Charlottesville pursued, pursuant to that statute. Now, lest it be suggested that that statute doesn't encompass this case, I would hold out this court's decision in the Thrush case as being directly on point here. There's been a question as to whether what the commission was asked to do was a quote-unquote new trial that would implicate the statute that I just mentioned. But in the case of Thrush, there was exactly the same procedural history. The Court of Appeals took up the case. They found that the average weekly wage hadn't been decided properly, and they said, here is the means by which an average weekly wage is properly decided, and we instruct the commission to take these steps into account when making further decisions. It appears from the opinion that without further proceedings, the court the commission actually did exactly that. They made new calculations, issued a new opinion, and it went back up. At which point, the Uninsured Employers Fund attempted to go back to revisit some of the previously stated errors and was met with an objection based on the law of the case doctrine. And this court said that the statute, which I just cited, expressly permitted them to await the outcome of remand. They had no problem with the concept of this being a new trial. And that in so doing, they were permitted to continue to raise the issues that they had not fully had out on appeal. This is the same procedural posture that this case finds itself in. It's a case, the Thrush case, which I'm sure does not have a tremendous amount of utility on a day-to-day basis in appellate litigation, and so it is somewhat unsurprising that it's not often cited for the purposes that we cite it today. It's cited from time to time as a case which provides affirmative authority as to the general existence of the law of the case doctrine. This somewhat strange procedural history that we find ourselves in is not one which seems to appear too often. So therefore, perhaps it's not very surprising that Thrush has never been overruled by this court. Whether or not
this is Justice Kelsey, may I ask you this question?
Please.
The footnote, the Court of Appeals decision points out that the first two issues were raised in the first appeal. Would it be different conceptually if they had not been? In other words, assume for the sake of argument, again conceding nothing, that there are three or four different ways you can appeal with three or four different issues, and you appeal on one, not three, but you still get a remand on the one.
Of course.
So how does that work for you?
Well, Your Honor, I guess one could say that perhaps there's a waiver been worked if one doesn't previously hold. If you haven't asked for these issues to be considered all the while, perhaps there's been a waiver. Unless, of course, your new issue on appeal has been something which came in only because of the new proceedings at the commission. I think it's a little bit harder when there's been a new substantive decision by the commission that prompts you to go back up on appeal. I think you can't really say that the record is so complete that failure to request an appeal on a particular issue would constitute a waiver. But in this case, I do think we are in the fortunate position of having asserted these issues on appeal consistently, requested reconsideration where possible. We've not abandoned these issues at any phase.
So as you see it, then, if the claims were actually appealed initially, you will always get a second shot at it, assuming the court did not already specifically resolve it. But if the claims weren't initially raised as an assignment of error going up on appeal, you would still get a shot at a second appeal if you had a full and plenary retrial. and new decisions were made on the same subject. But if not, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Your Honor, I think there could be a distinction. I think you could find a case where, and workers' compensation is one of those places where perhaps it's a bit more easily divisible, but where perhaps there's a question of, you know, the occurrence of the injury, and then there's another question as to the period of disability or something of that sort. And if one part of that gets entirely hashed out by the court and it's not been pursued further, and it's not a part of what's being remanded, it's not necessary to the remand, perhaps one could say, well, that's a easily divisible issue. I don't think that's at all the case here, and so I will argue in my more favorable facts, and I will say everything that's part of what we've objected to on appeal consistently was necessarily at issue before the commission at every phase. When it got remanded, the commission still was making a decision. Was there an injury by accident? And all of these ancillary issues are necessarily a part of that. And they've all been conflated in a lot of different cases. And so they do have a lot of run together as well. Yes.
Counsel, this is Justice Powell. Help me with your understanding of what you believe the Court of Appeals did in Sclafani and how that plays into your argument. My question is it possible that in Sclafani 1, the Court of Appeals decided that there was sufficient evidence to show injury by accident, but not enough evidence to show the time frame? So they decided part one of the question, but said this would only apply if it occurred within a definable time frame. Is it possible that that was the decision that they made, or what do you think they did in Sclafani? Do you think they didn't address injury by accident?
Is it possible that they did so? I think I would say it would have perhaps been possible for them to do so. If they intended to do so, I don't believe that's what they did in their opinion. I don't think that's at all clear from what they've written in this opinion.
If they had addressed injury by accident and their only question was the time frame, how would that play into your argument?
Well, I would respectfully submit that it's impossible to do that. I think those questions are so impossibly interrelated that to try and suggest that I can make a piecemeal determination of one sort of approach on injury by accident and leave open the other part of the approach on injury by accident, I think that's getting down so far into the minutiae of one issue that those issues are, there's too much interplay. I don't think that's as easily divisible as all that.
Thank you.
If the justices don't have other questions, I will reserve the balance of the time I have.
2 minutes, 18 seconds.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Young.
May it please the court. My name is Brad Young. I represent William Sclafani, the appellee here. I refer to the appellant collectively as the city. I'll address two preliminary matters first. At the outset, our contention is the law of the case doctrine bars most of this appeal, but we still will assume at first that the law of the case doctrine doesn't apply. Second, the city denies seeking reversal of the Court of Appeals 2017 decision in Riverside Regional Jail Authority versus Duggar. That is just as well. This case was before the commission twice and before the Court of Appeals twice. And in all those proceedings, the city never argued that Duggar is bad law and should be reversed. It's particularly noteworthy that the commission's second opinion states, quote, "We find this case factually and legally indistinguishable from Duggar." The city never sought Duggar's reversal below, so it can't seek Duggar's reversal here. The city is thus left with challenging the factual findings below. Their effort is to show an evidentiary distinction between Duggar in this case. The factual findings at issue are, first, that Mr. Sclafani's injury was not from repetitive motion, and second, that he was injured in the afternoon training session. At this stage, the city must show that there's no credible evidence for at least one of those findings to prevail.
Counsel, may I, this is Justice Kelsey, may I direct your attention to the law of the case footnote? And help me out. Why is rigid temporal precision test not itself, by its very definition, an attempt to determine whether or not there is an injury by accident under the Workers' Compensation Code? Whether you're looking at 8 hours of cumulative trauma or 4 hours or whatever.
The workers' comp venerable principles require rigid temporal precision. Morris v. Morris says it must be a sudden event or an identifiable incident. And Duggar, the Court of Appeals, said 4 hours, an injury that occurs during 4 hours of training constitutes an identifiable incident. They said that's sufficient rigid temporal precision.
Yeah, I would agree with everything you just said. What I'm trying to understand is why would the Court of Appeals say we've already decided whether or not there is a suffered discrete injury by accident, but we're going to remand this to determine rigid temporal precision, which is the test we use for determining whether or not there was an injury by accident for purposes of the Workers' Compensation Code.
Well, that was the, you're speaking of the first Court of Appeals opinion. And they said, the Court of Appeals' first opinion said the dispositive issue is not whether the claimant's injury arose from repetitive trauma, but whether his injury was caused by an event bounded with rigid temporal precision. They said the commission had not made a finding that it occurred during the 4 hours of the afternoon. They said the commission could have made that from the evidence, but the commission had not expressly made that finding. So in the first appeal, the Court of Appeals remanded to the commission for a factual finding on that specific issue. Did his injury occur during the afternoon training session? That was the whole focus of the appeal. They said the dispositive issue is not whether the claimant's injury arose from repetitive trauma. So at that point, repetitive trauma is off the table if the law of the case doctrine applies. And it went back to the commission on remand on the sole issue is, did this non-repetitive injury occur in the afternoon training session? And the commission
an injury by accident in the first 4 hours, would he not be entitled to a workers' compensation award?
If he had had it in the first 4 hours, he would have, but the evidence showed that he did not have it in the first 4 hours.
Yeah, the only reason I'm following this line of questions, it seems to me that your opposing counsel's point is quite persuasive. These concepts are all different ways of asking the same question, which is, does he have an injury by accident that we should compensate? And we're using different verbal phrases to try to peel the onion back so we can figure this out, but it's the same underlying question, is it not? So law of the case would be misapplied here if that were true.
As I stated at the outset, I'm assuming the law of the case doctrine doesn't apply for this part of my argument. And my point is that the two factual issues are, did he suffer, the proceedings below found that he did not suffer a repetitive trauma injury, a repetitive motion injury. And then they said that non-repetitive injury occurred in the afternoon. Those are both factual findings. They're both subject to credible evidence review. There's credible evidence for both findings. So again, we're here, this is, assuming the law of the case doctrine doesn't apply, our argument is it applies to everything except the issue of whether the accident happened, the injury happened in the 4 hours in the afternoon. But assuming the law of the case doctrine doesn't apply, then we simply go to, that's my argument, which is, even if they win on law of the case, then they simply go to these factual issues. Both factual issues broke in my client's favor, and so they've got to show there's no credible evidence for both, for one of them, but there's credible evidence for both of them. So we should win. This is simply a credible evidence. If you throw out the law of the case doctrine, that they've already said we're not trying to overturn Duggar. The commission in its remand opinion said this case is exactly like Duggar. It's indistinguishable from Duggar. And so their task within those parameters is they've got to show the absence of credible evidence for one of those factual findings. And as we explained in our brief, there's abundant credible evidence for both of them. So we do not see how the city can prevail here. There are no legal, if you throw out the law of the case issue, there are no legal issues. It's just factual issues. That's credible evidence review, and we have credible evidence for both of the points at issue. Regarding the issue of injury from repetitive acts, this court's 1999 decision in a New Leaf Inc. versus Webb shows that whether an injury stems from repetitive motion is a factual finding subject to credible evidence review. I will quote it. At page 196, the opinion states, the factual part of the inquiry in this case is whether Webb suffered an impairment. This portion includes any facts relevant to the nature and cause of the impairment sustained by Webb. So the nature and cause of the impairment here is whether it was caused by a repetitive injury, repetitive acts leading to cumulative trauma. So whether an injury stems from repetitive acts is a factual finding subject to credible evidence review.
So can I interrupt you one more time? This is Justice Kelsey. Are you saying, and just tell me if I'm mischaracterizing this, it sounds like you're saying, well, maybe the law of the case might have been the wrong thing to put in that footnote, but it's harmless error in the end, because it all boils down to a factual finding, and I won the factual battle. Is that basically it?
Yeah, that's assuming the law of the case doctrine doesn't apply, we still win because there's credible evidence for the two factual findings that the city must demonstrate the absence of credible evidence on the finding that there was no injury from repetitive motion, and they have to demonstrate the absence of credible evidence on the finding that the injury happened in the afternoon. They can't do that in either case. On the repetitive motion issue, we talk about that on pages 28 and 31 of our brief. Mr. Sclafani said he was the takedown guy in handcuffs throughout the day. They went through different scenarios. He said there was one, the knife scenario one, where I was picked up a little funny. And then you compare that to Duggar. And the Court of Appeals in Duggar said here, Duggar testified that she was tossed a bit and taken down, movements which logically require pushing, grabbing, bending, and similar motions. The Court of Appeals then viewed the evidence in the light most favorable to the claimant in Duggar, who prevailed, and said Duggar's movements during defensive training were not repetitive in nature. Here, Mr. Sclafani was the takedown guy in arrest training where they handcuffed him. The city wants to imply that all day long they just put his hands behind his back, put cuffs on him, and took him down. The evidence and the inferences from the evidence, which he's entitled to, show that there were different scenarios. If there was a knife scenario, that implies there was a gun scenario or there was a stick scenario. They wanted to defend on the ground that it was repetitive motion, but they didn't produce evidence showing repetitive motion. As we talk about in our brief, repetitive motion injuries comes from someone like on an assembly line where they're doing the same motion over and over all day.
Counsel, if we discount the four-hour window in cases like Duggar, tell me what your best evidence is that there was an identifiable accident or sudden precipitating event that resulted in an obvious sudden mechanical or structural change.
That was, we offered that as an alternative ground in the proceedings below. on page 200 of the appendix, Mr. Sclafani said, he was talking about an incident at the end of the day. He said, there was just that one, the knife scenario one, where I was picked up a little funny is the only weird one that I felt like discomfort, but really didn't think anything of it. So that was a sudden event. That would satisfy the sudden event test. So even if we didn't have Duggar in the four-hour window that Duggar establishes, and that, again, is not at issue here because they say they're not trying to get Duggar reversed, that would also, that would show a sudden accident right there. As far as the injury in the afternoon, they started this training in the morning. They trained for 4 hours. They went to lunch. He had no trouble through that period. He said at lunch he had no problems at all, and then he went back for the four-hour training in the afternoon, and he had, at the end of the day, when he started driving away, he immediately felt pain. That's on all fours with what happened to the claimant and Duggar, and again, that's why the commission says this case is indistinguishable from Duggar. Now, turning to the law of the case doctrine, the issue is whether Section 17.1-412 repeals the law of the case doctrine for any court of appeals opinion that orders a remand. The statute says if the court of appeal remands for a new trial, any party aggrieved may accept the remand or proceed to petition for appeal in the Supreme Court. The city's got two problems relying on that statute. Number one, there was no remand for a new trial. The Court of Appeals sent this case back to the commission for a finding of fact on a single issue based on the evidence that had already been produced in the proceeding before the commission before. Second, the city was not aggrieved. The city is the one that appealed to the Court of Appeals, and they won. They got a reversal. How can they say they were aggrieved? So even if the law, the statute, changed the law of the case doctrine, and we do not believe it did for the reasons we stated in our brief, it's still, but the law of the case doctrine is common law, and the statute changing it is strictly construed. So the language of the statute doesn't fit what the city is arguing for. The city didn't, there was no remand for a new trial, and there was, the city wasn't aggrieved. Again, they won before the Court of Appeals. Now, we acknowledge Thrush, but Thrush has never been relied on since it was handed down. And there's no legislative history for what the purpose of that statute is, but it, and I've pondered this preparing for oral argument, and it occurred to me that, you know, the Court of Appeals came into existence in the mid-80s, and there may have been an issue about whether a Court of Appeals opinion ordering a remand for a new trial was an appealable order. The statute answers that question. It seems to me it's more likely that statute simply clarified that a court of appeals decision remanding for a new trial was a final order that was appealable to this court. I see I'm about out of time. Unless you have any further questions, I'll close.
I do have a question about your, this is Justice Powell, about your position that the city was not aggrieved, they won. Is it technically a win if the city appeals to the CAV and asks the CAV to tell the commission that they were wrong, but the city, the CAV sends it back to the commission to say, look at it again? Is that technically a win?
Well, the issue remains in doubt. I would say yes. We certainly were unable to seek our cost. That's a very concrete consequence of a reversal and remand. We couldn't seek her cost, so I'd say sure, they won. They weren't aggrieved at all. They came out ahead.
Thank you.
All right, on rebuttal, Mr. McNamara, you have 2 minutes and 18 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honors. So the council's just made a few points that I think place them in a bit of an uncomfortable position. Implicitly just suggested that Thrush, having not been used before, perhaps ought to be reversed. However, it seems that's not something that they've argued, while simultaneously taking the position that we, having not expressly argued for the reversal of a court of appeals case in Duggar should be precluded from making that argument. I think there's an inherent tension between those two positions. Furthermore, the counsel's position that Thrush ought not to apply, or that the statute that I've cited ought not to apply because this wasn't a remand for a new trial, is belied completely by the fact that in Thrush, the facts there were virtually identical in terms of what kind of a remand there was. The Court of Appeals issued a set of instructions to the commission to make a new calculation. The commission made a new calculation, issued a new opinion. That's not a new trial. If our case is not a new trial, and if it is a new trial, then our case was remanded for a new trial. It deserves the same procedural treatment as Thrush had.
May I ask you this? Even if you're right, and Thrush says that footnote 2 was in error, his point seems to be initially that so what? You know, all of the facts that would be triggered by a fulsome application of discrete injury by accident, identifiable incident, blah, 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 were considered by the Comp Commission, and the Comp Commission had the discretion to make the factual call, and that sort of sidelines this whole issue of law of the case. That's his argument. What's the brief response to it?
And I'm going to ask the Chief Justice for a bit of indulgence to perhaps respond at length, despite having about 10 seconds. I guess this is sort of a harmless error, sort of a contention, and I would suggest that it's important to consider what the standard of review is here, and it is not a mere credible evidence review, but rather a question of whether the facts as established were correctly applied to the legal standards here. That is freely reviewable on appeal. It's a mixed question of law and fact. Connor versus Bragg is the citation I had in page 12 of my brief. I suggest that's the appropriate standard to review here. We have not suggested that any of the factual findings in terms of did this happen or did that happen were incorrect. We suggested that having found the facts, they applied the incorrect legal standard. They applied the legal standard incorrectly. That is mixed question, and our request on appeal is as to the legal element of it and not the factual element of it. That said, I would submit to the court that I believe that the proper remedy here, should you be sympathetic to our position, is that you must remand to the Court of Appeals for further proceedings. They didn't decide things that have to be decided for this court to have a record to rule on.
All right. It seems to me that your time has expired. Has he answered your question, Justice Kelsey?
He has. He has. Thank you.
All right. This session of the Supreme Court is now adjourned.